Top of the morning.
We're doing a sequel. We're back by popular demand. Come on, everybody, strike up the band.
Negative possibilities are multiplying as we speak.
I'm sure I made a payment if it's about that bounce check.
I'm gonna steal the Declaration of Independence.
Hello and welcome to Where's the Damn Sequel, the podcast about movies that were intended to start big new Hollywood franchises, but something, maybe several things went wrong, and it looks like that isn't going to happen. We're back after an extensive hiatus. My name is Lucy and I am your host, and I'm joined today by two returning guests to the show, two very dear friends of mine, Owen Dobie and Shane Kelly. Hello, guys.
Hey. We were so confident that there wouldn't be a sequel that we recorded the episode now. 3 weeks after the movie came out.
Yeah.
I think the reason we need to do this episode so soon after the movie came out is because everyone will forget it exists in a few days' time.
Oh, it would be instantly wiped from our minds.
Reduced to mere rumor and speculation, like films like Jonah Hex, which people just refuse to believe still exists.
We know there won't be a franchise out of this.
Unless something goes horribly wrong and it's the only property they're able to make films of after coronavirus, because the actors don't have to appear in the same room together so they can all socially distance on set. So they just go, fuck it, let's make this.
Does the IP get renewed if you make the film?
Yes. No.
Yeah.
Oh, it does.
Yeah. In some sense.
On a side note, I think there's like an unreleased Fantastic Four film that just took advantage of.
Yeah.
If you release a film. Yeah. Anyway.
This was made, I'm pretty sure, now because the IP was about to run out and they needed to. I don't know why they needed to felt the need to keep it. It's not worth much, but they obviously thought, let's make it while we can before. You know, like it obviously cost them a lot of money back when the books were popular. So I think Disney were just like, you know what? May as well do this. I don't
know. These books aren't still coming out, are they?
I couldn't tell you. I assume no.
I feel I didn't read the books. Just get that out there. So yeah, I have no kind of familiarity with the source material.
Did you read the books, Shane?
I don't think so. I was aware of them at the time. I knew they were.
They were. I feel as if they were a bit of a scam where they were.
I might have read one.
Kids were given the impression that they were popular and worth reading, but I never actually knew any kids who were really into them. They never seemed to have a fan base.
I think my older brother read them. Not sure.
Maybe
we did have some in the house. We had one in the house.
Yeah.
I think it might have been kids who were slightly older than us.
Another one of his books.
Yeah, some of his like adult books have actually been kind of left more of a legacy, I think. But I mean, I feel as if these books might have been popular with kids who were like 8 in 2002, 2003. I think that we were slightly too young and they didn't last, but their success didn't really last very long. So that by the time we were the right age, in like 2005, they'd already kind of lost their magic, I think.
All right. So we set up that we're kind of not unqualified to talk about it, but we have no familiarity with the source material. So
it makes
it in a way that's better, to be honest, because then we can actually look at the movie as it is.
Yeah, exactly. So this film was meant to come out in August of 2019. And the trailer came out, I'm pretty sure, like spring of last year. Maybe like February of last year. And the trailer is like very weird and has a Radiohead song and is very moody and kind of interesting. And I thought, maybe this is like one of these weird things that sounds terrible on paper, but actually has kind of a unique vibe. And then it got pushed back to May of this year. And then coronavirus happened and they said, fuck it, let's just put it up on the website.
It's funny, I didn't hear about it until I got like an article popping up on my Google News feed saying Artemis Fowl, it was paddywhacked or something like that.
And that was the headline of the New York Times.
The next day you said it and I was like, huh, sounds familiar, Artemis Fowl. And
then, it had an extraordinarily like low profile until it came out. I don't think the majority
It didn't get a news cycle really.
Yeah, there was no sense that this existed. Like, and they fucked up and put it out the same weekend as The King of Staten Island and Spike Lee's The Five Bloods, which are two like big screaming movies. And I don't know why they did that, because
I
feel like
they're not the same audience.
I think in quarantine, every movie has an audience of everybody. because there's only one or two big movies every week coming out on streaming. And I think if you're funny or weird or bad or goofy enough, you can get everyone's attention. But this unfortunately clashed with two films that are kind of excellent and therefore just wasn't able to capitalize on its full meme potential. Although, like, almost everyone I am friends with on Letterboxd did seem to watch it and rate it one star. And it has one of the worst averages on that.
Oh, yeah. It's like...
Like, nobody's giving it ironic five-star ratings. People actually dislike it immensely. It's very unpopular.
I haven't gone through the letterbox of it, but...
Pretty funny
stuff. Yeah, no, I can't... Like, there isn't really... You know, like, you watch a movie, you see a bad movie, it's like, there's something in this for someone. Like,
yeah.
I'm not finding this enjoyable. But you know, like, Arnold Fowl was weird because it wasn't... I couldn't imagine that there was something in it for anyone. It was kind of...
There's not.
Kind of... That collection of scenes thrown together, and there was very unlikable characters.
I found it almost impossible to follow what was going on. And like, I know I was on my phone for most of it, but I just could not figure out what was happening.
Yeah, I'm probably jumping ahead. I was paying attention.
If you're able to try and outline the plot for us now in 30 seconds, please do.
I'll try it, but did they just come up with a name for the villain halfway through and everyone just kind of like went with it?
I do not know who the villain is.
The villain was Magnus Opal.
Who?
Oh, the creepy dude that you never see his face.
Oh, yeah. Yes, who kidnaps Colin Farrell. Yeah.
Who just stands on a railing for the entire movie.
Kind of like Regina King from Watchmen without the personality.
But like, I watched it in subtitles. I watched everything in subtitles. And then it suddenly starts referring to as, I think it was Opal.
Yeah.
I think all the characters were referring to that. The villain is Opal or something. Anyway.
Wait, I saw an
interesting... It was very weird. I must have missed it if there was even a scene.
I saw an interesting tweet. I don't know if I have it here, but basically somebody pointed out that there was like a MacGuffin in the film that everyone keeps talking about. It was some like magical thing, but no one ever actually speaks the words on screen, and somebody thought that it was overdubbed. I'll see if I can find it, but it was really interesting.
What, the thing they're after?
The thing they're after.
And it's never said, you never see them...
You never see them say the words.
Achilles? No?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it had a really cool name, actually. I can't remember. It's Achilles. Achilles, yeah.
It just feels like they came up at the last minute. I don't know.
I was like, so you know they call him Farrell? Yeah, he's a pretty controversial actor in terms of, is he good, is he bad?
Is he?
Most people like him.
Really?
I've never heard anyone say they didn't like him as an actor.
Ovid Nadir. okay, fine. But if you watch that film and that film alone, you would think he's a bad actor.
Yeah.
He's just kind of like, I love you, son.
He hasn't got much to work with.
I don't
understand
why. But that. Also in context, he's the best actor in the film.
He's the best actor in the film.
Yeah. But that's the thing, he's a big name actor and he is like, he's just very bland. He's very monotone.
Yeah.
Doesn't really have much emotion.
Somebody try and sum up the plot for the listeners.
Okay. So there's a dude and his kid, and the kid is smart. And
they live in a fancy house somewhere in Ireland.
It says it's in Ireland. They say it's in like Louth, essentially.
It's
in Louth.
RD boy.
Yeah, it's in Dundalk or somewhere.
Yeah.
So the kid wakes up one day and the dad is gone, and it's on the news that he's like a thief and steals like art and shit. And
that never gets referenced again. They just completely drop that kind of storyline.
That's like the media thing. There's a whole underworld.
Somebody on the news refers to Colin Farrell as a notorious criminal, and Artemis goes, "Not a notorious criminal. He's my dad."
Go on, Jane.
All right, so that happens, and then he's like, he gets a phone call. The kid gets a phone call, I think, from the bad guy.
The bad guy,
and saying, "Bring me this thing, your dad dies."
And this is
kind of it's a hostage ransom.
This is situation. When the film basically becomes Ireland Dig It, where you have Ufos doing his voiceover telling us we have to find the clues and solve the mystery.
And he opens a book called Irish Fairy Tales or something. And
yes.
Like, this is kind of as much of a hate crime to Ireland as the Queen's Corgi is to England.
I think it is. So
it's on that tier.
Like, this might be the opening of this film. You have like a cold open with Josh Gad being arrested, and he's like this, what is he, an elf or a troll?
He's a dwarf, but he's like human size.
Okay.
So he's a big dwarf.
The film starts with Josh Gad as a dwarf being dragged into a paddy wagon by the guy.
He was good. I'll give him that.
Dobie, no. I may not say that. No.
He was within his range. I'm not going to confuse that.
And then he goes, I'm going to tell you the story of Artemis. He then goes, he says the following line, our story begins in the only place left on Earth where magic is still real. The most magical place on Earth, Ireland.
And then Ireland.
Artemis surfing on waves while this like hokey diddly-idly leprechaun music plays.
You can taste the flavors through the screen.
Oh god, yeah. They really didn't set up his character well.
No, they set it up pretty well.
Not really. You want rooting for
nothing to him.
In the book, he's like this kind of slightly psychopathic villain who wants to do things for his own kind of like profit and selfish means.
But
and over the course of the series, apparently he becomes more sympathetic. But in the film, they're just like, nah, he's like a nice kid who wants to save his dad.
He was a prick.
But not for the right, like, I don't think they intended him to be. I think that was just how the
actor. Yeah, like, he's not written to be a prick. You just have poor taste in children.
Yeah, like.
Well, that's okay.
No, it's.
He's not likable.
You are very annoyed by children in general. And people that, like.
But I can't remember exactly what he said, but it's like, you know, the whole surfing scene. It's like, oh, I don't need school. I'm too good, or it's not for me. And then he's like, goes into the psychiatrist's office and he's just abusing the poor old man, you know, pointlessly. Like, there wasn't like one scene in him with him in it that I was like, oh, you know, this kid, you know, he's rooting for his dad.
In fairness, Artemis Fowl does a better job than normal people of showing that the bleeding male is actually smart.
Perhaps.
I think it does.
Perhaps.
At least they say, oh, he won some architecture competition when he was 7.
What if Paul Mescal played Artemis Fowl? I don't know. The other actor in it is this guy who's playing the butler, an actor I've never seen before in my life. I'll get his name for you. I mean, this character should have been played by like Sam Rockwell. I don't understand why they cast this guy who is not a well-known actor and doesn't really have any comedic presence.
He was a pretty pointless actor. Like, you know, I thought there was going to, or a character, sorry. I thought they were going to make him like a one-dimensional
kind of like a Game of Thrones guy.
Very, very striking eyes.
He didn't even, like, he wasn't even one-dimensional. Like, I thought he was just going to be like, oh, the macho butler or something. He was just kind of there in some scenes.
Calling him one-dimension does a disservice to dimension.
He was zero-dimensional. And then he brings in his niece, and the niece kind of does nothing. Was the niece just cut in post-production?
Yes, okay.
So the film was.
Okay, one. Yeah, like the niece serves no purpose other than making Artemis a sandwich at one point that he doesn't eat.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
But then there's a whole scene where the butler is dying and his niece just isn't in the scene at all.
I think Artemis was like,
I love you, I'll miss you.
And Artemis makes fun of the butler for crying when he's about to die. And the butler goes, I wasn't crying, but he was about to die.
Then 10 seconds, the butler comes back to life and they're out on the balcony and the niece is just there standing beside him. Like, she just wasn't in that scene.
The film is completely a mess. She could very well have been in the scene. It was just so forgettable.
She wasn't. I looked around and I was like, why aren't you talking to your daughter? Like,
she was invisible.
There were some things I found weird. You know, so it was obviously a Disney film. So there was like that whole underground city, you know, pretty high budget. CGI looked cool. Like, there's no really denying that.
Okay, I don't know. It didn't feel like
the whole kind of railway system and the prison scene with the shackles.
But it felt to me like they copy and pasted visual effects from like Guardians of the Galaxy, Tron Legacy, Tomorrowland. Like, they just stole little bits and pieces from all those films.
It was a bit of a mashup, but I liked it. And then you had the scene where was he skateboarding or something, kind of towards the start of the film.
Oh yeah,
and it was so like.
Is that a real house on the outside?
No, but like the shot of him flying through the air. He's like so clearly suspended and just green screen, like right up behind him, like probably touching his neck or something.
I really wasn't paying.
There was just weird things like that where he's like this massive multi-million production mixed in with quick. We get to see in 10 minutes while we still have daylight kind of thing.
Yeah. But it didn't have, like, sometimes when these things are horrendous, they have the perk of being overly sincere. This doesn't have that at all.
Yeah, it was mean-spirited. Like, it just felt it, like it.
But it has, like, it has the stupid Marvel cut all sound to character listening to headphones slightly too loud singing pop song. I swear, I just...
the worst joke in all of them.
It is. It really is. And he just looks around like, oh, am I too loud? It's a classic. And, like, fucking hell. Like... just keep the tropey shit out, and like I'll give it a pass. I'm being sincere, at least.
Okay, so what do we think of the fairies?
Didn't like them. Wasn't rooting for them at all.
Interesting. Their culture didn't stand out to me at all.
What's the name of the character who plays? It's the one from James Bond.
Judi Dench.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Judi Dench. Thanks. Man, she has done it like. Was she putting on a voice, or, you know, after dying?
Oh yeah, she was doing. That's her doing Mrs. Brown. Like,
oh god,
half of the morning.
No, stop. We're not. That's yeah.
It was pretty embarrassing. Like, I'm not really overly familiar with her. Yeah,
she gets out of space.
I know.
Says, top of the morning.
Been
on,
she's been in.
I screamed at the TV. I've never screamed. At
yeah.
Yeah, I screamed. I screamed at the TV. And. Also, the CGI of the horse, dude, bad. Is just horrendous.
I wasn't going to bring up the horse, Foley. I found that very odd.
Foley's cool. I like Foley. Foley is the one saving grace in the film, but he looks like shit.
Have you ever seen that?
He looks like a Minecraft horse.
Pierce Brosnan played a centaur in the Percy Jackson films, I think, and he was a very similar design, yeah.
Foley was kind of wild. Like, I don't know. There's just so many things like. Knowing like you're doing world building or whatever, you see it in films. They've all these like random things that, you know, don't pay attention to detail or whatever. Like he was a centaur. What? Why? Like, you know, sometimes things don't need explanations. But there was no other centaurs in. I don't know. I feel like the film was just so bad. I'm just going to nitpick it because there was nothing redeeming about it.
Currently, like underrepresented in the higher up ranks of fairy. Society. I think that's the real theme underlying this. Yeah. What was I going to say?
There's also
like this secondary villain who works within the cops.
He's just like a bad. He's just a bad fairy.
No,
cop.
But he was in jail as well, and like the Opal baddie just let him out and said, "You were."
He just reminds me of Reno, like,
which has
reminds
no.
Reminds me of the guy from Pirates of the Caribbean from the trading company. That's just type of that character.
But also, like, I'm in charge now, and then 10 minutes later, Julian is back in charge, and it's just like, what?
I think the part of this film that has become the most infamous online in the last week and a bit is the Josh Gad eating dirt with his disjointed jaw.
Yeah, and it's just coming out his ass.
Yeah, which is kind of a. Extraordinary, almost beautiful act of disgusting, inhuman CG. I don't know.
Yeah, it's
horror.
It's not a very subtle metaphor, but yeah.
All right. You got any more thoughts on the film, or are we talking about a sequel?
I have one more. I want to talk about the scene where
I didn't get fully through the plot, but I don't think that matters.
No.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone.
We have the very quality closing line that I'm very fond of.
What was this?
It brings the film into like a loop and just shows the real character development throughout the thing. Because at the start, his dad gets kidnapped, and he's like, "He's my dad. He's not a criminal." And then at the end, he says, "I'm Artemis Hall. I'm a criminal." And I was just like. Wow, look at that, he's changed so much. This experience
is encouraging kids to become criminals.
I want to talk about the scene, the one that I was talking to you on WhatsApp, where so it's very out of context if you can take it. So he has this woman, this female, drugged, shot with a tranquilizer gun, and then he brings her and he locks her up in a secret like prison cage that is in his basement. And then he says, I'm here to invite you into my home. You must do whatever I say.
Yes, I remember that, yes.
But I assume that's some, like, fairy folklore that you, like, have to invite them in. It's like vampires and shit. And I think you're projecting, like, unnecessary sexual subtext into this.
Of course he is, but we're entitled to do that.
True.
Yeah.
But we're ignoring Josh Gad in this situation.
We are.
And his exploits.
So Josh Gad is in a sort of prison queue of some sort to be arrested or processed in immigration or something, I don't know. And he's beside the kind of female lead of the film, this young fairy woman. And he's kind of being flirtatious with her. And I was like, these actors do not look a similar age.
Wait, was Josh Gad in that film?
What?
Who's Josh Gad? He's a goblin here. This guy.
He's the dwarf human. The guy that eats shit.
Wait, Dobie, do you not know who Josh Gad is?
No.
Oh my god, you're so
like Nemesis of the Pod, Josh Gad.
He blocks me on Twitter. He's Nemesis of the Pod.
Oh, okay.
Fair play to you.
Oh, I recognize him from some film.
Well, we're about to do Josh Gad.
Kevin Hart.
Josh Gad edition of the box office game. Now, obviously, this film did not come out in the cinema, so we have no box office figures for it.
Yeah.
Cinemas are closed around the world right now. So instead, let's see. I mean, Dobie hasn't really heard of him, but let's see.
Are we doing the box office game now, or are we talking about a sequel?
Yeah, we'll do it first.
Okay.
Topical. Let's see if you can name Josh Gad's top 10 most successful films.
I think I know his number one.
Oh, Dog's Purpose.
A Dog's Purpose is number 8.
Frozen is number one.
Frozen is number 2.
Who's he in Frozen?
Frozen 2 is number 1.
Correct.
Okay.
He plays Olaf, the amusing comedy Snowman.
Okay.
Spends a lot of his time phoning up.
Murder on the Orient Express is there.
Is number 6. But Josh Gad spends a lot of his life phoning up kids whose parents have died, talking to them on the phone in the voice of Olaf. It's very disturbing, and I'm sure it's scarred him for life.
That sounds kind of nice.
No. That's weird. Is it unsolicited or did they ask for it?
I think it's unsolicited.
Yeah, so you just calling orphans, saying.
All right, number 3. Number 3 is a 2017.
21 with Kevin Spacey.
No. Is he in that? That's not on the, no, he's not in that.
I think he is.
He's not on the list. No, I don't think he's in that.
I think he's one of the friends. So. Okay. Like, he's a background character.
Supporting roles. No, he's not. It would be here. No.
Really?
No, sorry.
Is he in something where he's like a nerd's friend?
Yes. A few things, sort of. Look, number 3.
Okay,
2017 Disney picture in which Josh Gad played a gay character who was talked about a lot in the media.
Is it animated?
No.
Is it not animated? Is it live action?
It is a live action picture.
I'm only joking.
Josh Gad is like the fifth main character, but it was caused a lot of stir at the time because there was a brief hint that him and another character might have a gay romance going on.
Should I know it?
It's like a stupid movie for normies. I don't know.
Beauty and the Beast or something.
Correct.
Good job. Oh, good. The candler or some shit, is he?
He is not. He is just a guy called LeFou who is very irritating. And sings a song. Number 4 is an animated film that I did not know he was in. It is a fourth film in a series that does not really have any impact on our lives.
Ice Age?
Correct. You remember the name of the fourth one?
Oh, he was a possum or something. Ice Age.
Continental Drift.
Correct. Good job. Number 5 is another animated movie that I didn't know he was in. This one is based on IP that is like, ooh, they turned this into a film? Like, it's a weird one. It's based on like a dumb thing that exists in culture that has nothing to do with film.
Angry Birds or something.
Correct. Good job.
Man, I'm on a roll.
You're good. Well, Shane. Good job.
Got Orient Express, and then number 7, you got one of the ones that I probably complained about when he blocked me. A true all-time awful piece of garbage. This is a film in which, how could I describe it without giving away hints?
Live action.
Live action. One of my boys is in it. Okay. One of my guys is in it. And it is just a really gross, horrible film that no one really talks about. Except me.
What year?
2015.
Okay.
Like one of my
who's it's not Spielberg, he doesn't make
garbage. No. One of my guys is the star of this. How many of my guys are like top billed on films? Think about it.
Not Baldwin, not
Spender,
Jeff Daniels.
No, like more like
Sandler.
Yes.
Really?
Oh, Funny People 2.
This is like a kids film.
Pixels, no.
Yes, correct.
Oh, it is Pixels.
Ew. Number 8 is A Dog's Purpose. Number 9 is a sequel to a film that we talked about just there. Angry Birds
Pixels 2. Pixels 2. Angry Birds 2. Jeez.
Number 10 is the first film on this list that is actually like a real movie. in this, he plays the brother of Jake Gyllenhaal and pretty early from his career.
Nightcrawler or something.
No, it's comedy.
I haven't seen that.
What a film, though.
Oh, it's comedy.
Yeah.
Prisoners. No.
This film is called Love and Other Drugs.
I've heard the name. It's one of the standard old.
Josh Gad's films have collectively made $4,450,000,000.
This could go on.
If somebody went back in time and killed baby Josh Gad, the world would be. Have $4.4 billion more dollars to spend on homeless people.
Something tells me that they still would have made Angry Birds, whether or not Josh Gad was a person. But I don't.
I like to think they wouldn't.
Right. So, Artemis Fowl 2.
Artemis Fowl 2.
So,
like it did leave it. It left a nice cliffhanger. To be fair, Artemis, no criminal. They busted Josh Gad out of jail. The dad is back.
Paul Farrell's dad is back, yeah.
The villain hasn't been caught.
So, because none of us has read the books, I think we're in a good position to make up the plot.
I do have the plot of the sequel here.
Theorize.
The sequel is called The Arctic Incident, and it has got like an icy theme, and I guess they hang out in the Arctic, and there's stuff about the Russian mafia, and yeah, sounds kind of good. Sounds like it could be good.
Yeah, but okay.
So all the main characters.
And if they did, they would definitely butcher it.
I wouldn't mind.
Oh, it's not going to be mad.
Fairies flapping around in the Arctic.
Do you think they'll make this into a TV show at some point?
No, I think that this IP is going to die. Completely dead. There's no fan base for it. Nobody wanted this to be made. There's like 10 people on
Twitter. They probably should have gone the TV route.
I mean, maybe, but you would still have to sell people on the premise because nobody remembers what these books are about. That's the problem. Yeah. This should have been made in 2008.
People watch a lot of shit.
I know. This should have been made. This should have been made in like 2007, and it would have done fine. Would have done fine. It's like 50. It's not 5 years too late.
He might have got The Rock in it back then, or something.
Yeah, the butler he could have played. Yeah, probably. Like it would have worked in 2007. I don't know. I feel like it would have been like a functional.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Fantasy. Yeah, like something that would have like made its money back. This is just like not what people want to see anymore. It isn't part of a comic book universe. It
has is this the worst child performance you've seen?
Ever?
No.
No, in the worst. Like,
I'm not even sure he's a child performer. This guy's like 15. I mean, I don't think, like, it's kind of unfair on children to compare them to this guy because he should know
better. Don't dig into the kid, I think.
Ah, but he was bad.
This is just a wise
I think choice. It's worth pointing out that Robert De Niro is a producer on this.
Yes, it is worth pointing out. It's also worth pointing out that the kid is the grandson of Robert Shaw from Jaws.
Wait,
he's basically.
Did you say Robert De Niro?
Yes, producer on this film.
We're talking about Artemis Fowl, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Did they buy the right to have his name on the film?
I think. He might have owned the IP of the book or something.
Why would he own it?
Because
he's a rich dude. He just invests his money in stuff. Yeah.
I'll look up and see. Oh, it just says like he is okay. Somebody was introduced to the books by Robert De Niro. So De Niro, like, when he has kids, I guess one of his kids was into the books 20 years ago. Okay. But like, Harvey Weinstein owned the rights to this. Okay. So the Weinstein Company bought the rights to this book while their company was owned by Disney in the mid-2000s. They left the rights to Artemis Fowl at Disney. Weinstein said, if you had told me 5 years ago I would be producing a project with Disney, I would have thought you were crazy. He added that he was introduced to the books by Robert De Niro. Holy shit.
Robert De Niro should be in jail.
Okay, so I pulled up the Letterboxd, and we all know everyone's trashing it. So I thought I'd pull up the 5-star reviews.
Yeah, these are fine.
I looked at them. There's nothing.
They're just idiots.
They're not even ironic.
I'm pretty sure they're all ironic. Like,
they're just deep again.
They're not funny. But like, okay, one of them is, oh no, my sunglasses are off, the fairies are making me rate this 5 stars. And there's like people talking about how they love this book series and they didn't want to like trash the movie because of the nostalgia.
Yeah,
nobody
who gave it a 5-star review, so from what I'm kind of reading, was genuine. And there are some that I don't know if they're kind of like taking the piss, like an inspired masterpiece that will take you on an emotional roller coaster, truly one for the books. So they're like making a joke there. I don't know.
There was one Irish website that's like a real like movie website, but not a good one, that gave it 4 stars and said that it was like very fast paced, action packed, and opened up an exciting new fantasy world. And like, that's just delusional.
I'd say they had double speed on or something.
Yeah, they had double speed on.
No, it's fast paced because they cut out like.
Yeah, it's fast paced because there's no fucking exposition. It's just stuff.
But there is exposition at the same time, and it's kind of.
The perfect way to describe that movie is it's just color coming at you all at once.
But not even nice color.
Sound.
It's not even set in Ireland. It's not even shot in Ireland.
Yeah, it wasn't even shot in Ireland. It's just so boring.
It's dumb. They can't create any sort of tension or expectation because they'll say something and then 10 minutes later it'll be resolved. But like, it's just either cut out or reshoot of like, and doesn't directly relate back to what was said.
The script was written by Conor McPherson, who is an Irish playwright who has written some like pretty well-regarded plays that have been on in Dublin. Yeah.
Stick to plays.
The full script did not make it into that.
Wrote fucking I Went Down with Brendan Gleeson, which is an excellent film. He's a good writer. It's really weird that an Irish guy wrote this because it feels like it was written by a fucking algorithm.
Yeah, that's kind of funny actually.
I like the bit when he opens the drawer and he's like reading the book. He's like, fairies, they can't be real.
Unless.
Can they? And it's like.
The second credited writer on this film was the guy who wrote, wait one second, Mr. Bean's Holiday.
It's not a bad film.
No, it's not. But I don't think it's what you want when you're making your fairy and dwarf based fantasy film for $125 million.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's funny because Artemis Fowl, when I was kind of watching it, it's kind of like, that's kind of the movie that when I was younger, I'd want to go see.
Yeah, me too. Oh, I would
have to drag my parents along
to it. I would have dragged my whole family to see this. The thing is,
it's
the exact kind of film that we do on this podcast because it's the kind of movie that I was really into and always disappointed by when I was 10 years old.
I was like 10, up until I was 10, movies were just like, shapes and colors, and I was like, this is exciting regardless of any content of them.
Yes.
And then I saw Marmaduke and I had a existential crisis. And
Josh Gad is in that.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he actually?
He's in everything that's bad in the world.
Are you joking? Is he actually in Marmaduke?
Yes, he is in Marmaduke.
Oh, fucking hell. Oh, I'm gonna block Josh Gad.
I told you the story that my supervisor Michal in work once was talking to me about his favorite horror movies of the last 2 years. And he tells me him and his wife watched this really scary Australian horror film called Marmaduke. And then I went, are you talking about the Babadook?
That's hilarious.
It was like, Michal, I know Marmaduke's pretty fucking terrible, but unless you were like on mushrooms, I'm not sure you'd call it an Australian horror.
Dog, he was talking.
Who's the human in Marmaduke? Who's like the owner of Marmaduke?
Oh, James Marsden, probably.
If any of you can,
it's not James Marsden.
If
any someone like Ben Stiller or Owen Wilson.
No, it's not someone.
So you're thinking of Marley and Me.
Yeah. No, Ben Stiller's not in Marley and Me.
No, Owen Wilson is.
Owen Wilson, yeah.
Okay, the correct answer is it's Lee Pace.
Who's that?
He's a good actor. He's in the Hobbits and stuff. He's a pretty good actor.
Wait, $83 million at the box office.
The cast of Marmaduke is completely insane. It's completely insane.
Oh, Owen Wilson is Marmaduke.
Yeah, I got it right. I thought it was a human, but no.
Look at the supporting cast.
Emma Stone, Fergie, Judy Greer, Kiefer Sutherland. Steve Coogan. H. Macy.
Holy shit, Kiefer Sutherland.
Marlon Wayans, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, George Lopez. And
there's a Colfer guy in here. I wonder, is he relation?
Colfer?
Chris Colfer is a dog.
Chris Colfer's from Glee. He also writes books about fairies for children. He writes fantasy books as well.
Oh, Josh Gad is Bandana Dog.
Okay, we have to do an episode on
that. Yeah, Williams.
That was him just preparing for his role in A Dog's Purpose.
Can someone explain to me why there's so many famous actors on the
Ice-T, Michael Teagan.
But the poster says Owen Wilson, George Lopez.
I don't know. Was Emma Stone not big at the time? Nah, 2010. This is post Superbad, like.
Yeah, but pre-Easy A, so she
pre-Easy A, yeah, I was wondering.
But Easy A was trash.
Dobie, that's a fantastic film, so.
I hated it.
I've never heard anyone say they didn't like it. Interesting. First person I've ever heard say they didn't like it.
Well, I think I told you before I didn't like it. Anyway.
George Lopez is...
That's why we have Dobie on, for an opposing viewpoint.
Honestly, George Lopez's best contribution to culture is in the Tim Robinson gun store sketch, where... his character acknowledges that George Lopez was on the bus when he blocked the toilet because George Lopez's tour bus broke down.
Okay.
Okay.
So, back to Arno's foul. There's not really much to say. You know, in the Marvel movies, like, when they first come, like, Iron Man 1 is a good example. It's not really that good of a film. If you just take it by itself,
yeah.
I actually don't mind.
It's like an action film. There's like some cool scenes in it. You know, Robert Downey Jr. is a playboy. He's cool.
The magic of that is that he's really, really entertaining and he's really charismatic. And
he's a big presence.
Yeah, but you just take the film by itself. There's action in it. There's kind of those cool scenes. You know, where he goes.
It does the job.
Like that Middle Eastern country, and like he uses the suit and does class and whatever.
Yeah.
There was no like. So you could say that the Marvel movies are action driven. So Iron Man Fowl was neither action or story driven.
Hmm.
And so what was it then?
I don't know. How do we get this over with as fast as possible?
Yeah. Like it tried to like, ooh, we have a cool world. You're immersed in this now.
Yeah, but you're only immersed in it for, okay, the movie's 90 minutes and like...
Not just about. Like Colin Farrell comes back in 78 minutes.
Okay, so it's 80 minutes. I'd say about... 30 of those are just like the manor house Irish stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So talking about less than an hour of immersive world, like that's not immersive.
Like they probably don't show the underground thing until 25 minutes in.
Yeah, they definitely don't. Yeah, they spend like 10 minutes there.
There's really just nothing to bite into in that film. Like there's no like this episode's obviously it's very hard to talk about because aside from trashing the story and. You know, maybe some of the characters. There's nothing really like else to say.
No, like it's kind of unbelievably bad, but it's also bad in ways that aren't particularly interesting.
It's not sincere. It's not.
Like it'd be more fun to talk about Alita: Battle Angel, which is like this hyper sincere movie that wants you to be in love with it, and this is just kind of like, we got your money. Go along.
Yeah,
this isn't a genuine attempt at creating something kids would like.
Yeah. It's just
this is completely cynical and like money, please.
Yeah.
Here, might as well make it.
We have the rights.
Yeah, exactly. It's
It's just like I said earlier. It's like, look, we've 20 minutes of daylight left. Just get it done. Like, there's just nothing over the top. There's nothing extreme. There's nothing standing out about it. It's just they do the scene. That's it.
I think it's really sad that because of COVID, this never got a cinema release and we never got to laugh at how unbelievably little money it would have made.
Do you have any... Are there any stories out of the production of it? Like, did shit go wrong?
Not yet. I'd say there will be in a week or two. I think that a lot of like the journalists in LA just like aren't interested enough in it to bother getting the sources.
Yeah. So it's going to fly under the radar, I guess.
Yeah. But I think like it would have, I think it would have made like, I think it would have been like the biggest flop of maybe of all time. Like it would have made maybe like 10 million. I can't see anyone going to see it.
Yeah.
Like this film is essentially 150 million in the hole.
Okay.
Probably, yeah. Wait, so
called What Happened to Artemis Fowl?
Did you say it was pushed back twice, Lucien?
Yeah.
Why was it pushed back the first time?
Just because they were like,
reshoots.
We're not releasing this shit. Probably reshoots, yeah.
Yeah, so they probably were just looking for an out. And it's like, fuck it, we'll just stick it on Disney Plus. And not advertise it. Just get it out there.
Did Disney fund? Yeah, Disney funded it, obviously.
I have some information about it here, okay? So it says it was originally optioned by Miramax 20 years ago in 2000. And they were going to get it done that decade. Then Harry Potter came out. And apparently there were 8 books and they sold 25 million copies. I wouldn't have thought that, honestly. So various directors and screenwriters signed on and departed the thriller. The production never seemed to find the right team, so it was handed over to Disney. There was an acquisition of Fox, so yeah, that's why it got pushed back. It says, this is a long article. This is good. I should have looked at this before the podcast. That would have been a good idea.
We don't do
right. You were as prepared for this podcast that they were prepared for that movie.
They auditioned 12,000 kids to play Artemis around Ireland. Where would you find 12,000 14-year-old boys in Ireland? There aren't that many, are there?
Hardly.
It's a good question.
And 12,000 that, like...
There's no way.
...want to act.
Yeah, if you... I don't get
the statistics. They just go to every TY class in the country and hold open auditions, like...
You must have. 12,000.
Yeah, if they did 12,000, we surely... Like, I know Ireland's big, you know, that's 4 million, whatever... We surely would have heard of someone who went for it.
Yeah, no, we would have. We would have, like... There's no
way. Unless they just did it in Dublin, in, like, really posh schools or something.
I don't know. There's no way. It seems really unlikely they went to 12,000 and then they ended up on a guy who happens to be an Oscar-winning actor's grandson. It's like...
Yeah, exactly.
And
his kind of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not really fair to dump on the kid, though, I think.
It is. He's old enough now that he should be good.
Okay, like I know you can give me one example.
Okay, it's not good, but like it's on.
Look, I know you can give me an example of a good child actor. So just give me one, and then I'll maybe try to compare.
Jacob Tremblay from Room and various
other. Oh, okay. I haven't seen The Room.
Okay, how about
The little shit from King of Staten Island, the guy that got tattooed.
Yeah,
he's better.
Ah, he was good. He was funny.
We like.
But fair, I feel like everyone in Staten Island is a bit like that.
Everyone in that movie's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apatow's really good at casting kids. Like his own kids are great. Like his own kids are so good and funny people. He's really good with child actors in it.
But the problem, you know, with kind of dumping on the kid, like, he's still young. He probably didn't have that much experience. Sure. I mean, like it's pretty like he is Irish, right?
I'm not like damn the kid for being in it.
No,
they put him.
But
in
like,
it's not his fault.
Like there aren't going to be any good child actors from Ireland living in Ireland, you know?
Yeah, no, not really.
Well,
so it's kind of mean, to kind of dump on him a little bit.
But honestly, I've seen kids on Fair City who are a lot better than him. There are some.
Okay, fair enough.
I've seen kids in plays like around the town hall that are better than him.
Yeah,
apparently it's a hard role to pull off. You know, a likable, arrogant person.
So it says Colin Farrell was only actually announced to be in the film in February of this year. Now, they obviously filmed his stuff before then, but like no one actually knew he was in it because I definitely didn't know.
This seems to have a similar energy to Doolittle. I haven't seen Doolittle.
No, Doolittle's a lot better.
It's better, is it?
Oh, it's much better.
Yeah.
Doolittle's fine. Like it's not terrible. It's like fine. There's like Jason Mantzoukas' voice is like a fruit fly.
Yeah.
It's got comedy elements, like.
Yeah.
This
I think. Hey, so Shane, what did you like the most about the film?
What are we talking about? This or King of Staten Island?
No,
I liked that it was short. I liked that it was under 90 minutes. I think that was pretty cool.
the music. Yeah,
that's the only benefit to the film is that it's under 90 minutes.
Imagine if this was 2 hours.
I like the dwarf character.
Well,
I thought he was cool.
You're alone, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I almost liked the whole interrogation scene. So I thought the film was going to play out that way, a bit like The Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
Kind of something like that.
Yeah, but it was kind of a decent framing device. Like, I liked that the film started.
I feel like they kind of forgot about it halfway through and then came back to it later.
Oh, yeah, it seems like that.
They forgot about everything 5 minutes after they had it. Yeah. Like, everything was just,
It could have turned in a little bit of waterboarding with Josh Gad. Like he was in an interrogation.
Just a little bit waterboarding?
Just a little bit of waterboarding.
Yeah. I don't know.
Waterboarding is bad. Not when Josh.
There's just so many random things in that film. Like, that whole prison scene was pretty random.
So random.
What did you like about it, Lucien?
Exactly, real 27.
Nah, I didn't like anything about it.
No, there's nothing to like, man.
Nothing to like. I thought it was fucking terrible. I was on my phone.
There's nothing to like until you compare it to everything else in the film. Then you can kind of pick something you like.
Everything you're saying about it is familiar to me. Like, I was on my phone the entire time.
I wasn't even, and it's still just.
All right.
Like, it's not aggressively boring.
No.
It's too kind of. Like, kids' movies. Like,
the dialogue is kind of actively terrible, so you kind of engage with it to hear what they're going to say next. It's not as if it's just generic, dull. It is actually kind of like curiously shit.
Yeah, but it's like.
Yeah, you've got some kind of good ways of putting it. Yeah.
All right.
It's kind of all just exposition, so you listen to it and it's fine. Or else it's not.
At the same time, none of it was.
Yeah.
All right. No,
like, there's no rules. The world is.
Yeah, no rules.
So, to answer the question, where is the damn sequel? They probably shot the screenwriter or the whatever.
RIP.
All source material.
Thoughts and prayers. I hope Owen Calfer gets his IP back, and I hope that he made money off this film.
Oh, he did.
Would he though? If he sells the IP, does he got money? Does he get money
from it 20 years ago before the middle of the Celtic title?
So if he doesn't own the IP, does he make no money?
He definitely got a couple mil for it.
I'm sure he gets a cut of the.
And now he's probably going to get a couple mil. Probably maybe just
the movie made no money. Who's going to give him a couple of million?
No, if they
put from the rights, people are going to buy the books.
No, but if they put the film out online, they change all of the agreements so that everyone just gets paid up front. Like, they don't just not pay you because it's not out in the cinema.
Yeah,
but he probably wasn't going to get any of the profit anyway. But whatever.
But like, when you sell your IP,
yeah,
is that kind of it? Like, or do you still maintain some
depends on your agent.
Yeah, you probably do. Like
J.K. Rowling makes money every time somebody buys a Harry Potter thing in pennies. Like, she makes money off every element of that brand.
Yeah. Like, I think some actors, only they do. It's like, oh, in addition to my 20 mil, I get 10% of the profit or something like that. I doubt Owen Calfer, whoever, you know.
Yeah.
That's his name, right? Yeah, I doubt. I don't know him. I doubt. I've only read a few of his books. I doubt he signed up to anything like that.
Yeah. If he even did in 2000, I'm sure he got paid off at some point along the way just to...
He got like probably, if I had to guess, I'd say he probably got 10, 15, not 20 mil, but kind of maybe 10 to 20 mil. And he's probably going to get like just under a mil from book sales now. Next year.
I don't know. It doesn't say how much he paid for it. Oh yeah, so Weinstein was meant to be credited as a producer, but Disney like paid him off and took his name off it basically.
Yeah.
I mean, Weinstein produced Lord of the Rings around the time that he bought this book. But he bought it. Yeah. He bought it before it was published.
I think this worked out for Disney because they delayed it twice. Yeah, they knew it wasn't going to make any money. They're probably going to lose a lot more money if it was released in cinemas. And look, they're like, look, our shitty kind of semi-failing streaming service needs more content. So we'll just fuck it onto that. And that'll buy us a week of time or something.
Grand. All right. That's it. Thanks, guys.
We're never going to speak of this again. Goodbye.
Yeah, we'll forget about it next week.
With more pod. You can follow the show on social media, Sequel Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks to Dobie. Thanks to Shane. We'll have
thanks for having us.
A lot more episodes now, and hopefully some of them will be to your liking. All right. Have a good day. See you later.